Good afternoon. I'm Allison Richter, counsel for Forrest Miller Jr. I was not appointed by the ADC. He has never had appointment of counsel for post-conviction matters. I volunteered to represent him in order to bring some of these issues to the court. I asked for oral argument in this case. I mean, I think everything that the court needs to know is in the opening brief regarding the facts and the law, but I asked for oral argument in this case to answer any questions and to see if there's any way I can convince the court to give more published guidance regarding some of these issues where there's holes in the statute and where Rule 33, Rule 35, and a post-conviction statute intersect, especially regarding issues of newly discovered evidence. I mean, in this case, the gravamen of the court's order denying his 35C motion for the newly discovered evidence, and that's the affidavit of the children saying that they lied to social services, and while their father, while there was physical abuse, there was no sexual abuse in the home, and that they fabricated that in order to get even with their parents for putting them in foster care or causing them to be placed in foster care as teenagers. If you notice the dates, I mean, Mr. Miller, when he finally was able to contact his middle son, Kay, and I'll just call the sons by their first initial because they are technically sex assault victims, even though they're all adults now. The middle son, Kay, he submitted his affidavit in August of, or April of 2007, recanting. And then Mr. Miller filed his Rule 35C motion less than 3 years later. And you could see why maybe a pro se defendant would think that he had 3 years, or that 3 years should be timely because of the three-year time bar. And I see a lot of pro se defendants who make that mistake. There's no guidance in either the statute or 35C for when a subsequent 35C motion is timely, either whether it's raising Silva issues or whether it's raising newly discovered evidence issues, both of which obviously couldn't have been raised in the prior 35C because the issues didn't exist yet. And these pro se defendants think that, well, 3 years is the magic number, so as long as I'm within the three-year deadline, then it should be timely. The district court ruled that he sat on his evidence too long, and this newly discovered evidence could have been discovered sooner in the exercise of due diligence.
Ms. Redenburg, let me interrupt you and ask you this. We've had for a long time case law that says that unfamiliarity with the law is not a reason to excuse compliance with the rules in 35C cases. So is that one of the gaps in the law that you were referring to at the outset of your argument?
I'm not saying he was unfamiliar with the law. I mean, there literally is no law directly on this point. I mean, when is a subsequent Rule 35C motion timely? And when, I mean, what are the timelines? What is the specific guidance to the district court as to how to determine when a subsequent 35C motion is timely? Should once a defendant thinks he's got ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel, should he file it immediately? Should he file it a year later, 3 years later? This defendant was trying to gather as much evidence as he could, so he wouldn't be in the position of someone saying, well, this is not enough evidence. And then if he came back again later and said, well, here's now the affidavit from my niece, the court would say, well, now this is a subsequent 35C on a newly discovered evidence issue, and you're barred for that procedural matter. So he first got the affidavit from his oldest son, F, who obviously was the first of the children to become an adult. Then he had to hire that lawyer and spent the last of his financial resources to try to find the next son, Kay. Kay was finally found in 2007 because he was in the Lookout Mountain facility and was able to submit his affidavit once he became an adult. And then Mr. Miller tried to find some of the younger children, including his niece. And when he got the statement from his niece and then had three affidavits, that's when he filed his Rule 35C motion. And it was still within 3 years after Kay submitted his affidavit. And I think Kay's affidavit is probably the most compelling of the three. But, you know, the issue is his motion timely? And was the district court wrong in discarding this evidence of newly discovered evidence on the grounds that she discarded it without holding an evidentiary hearing? I mean, she made findings such that, well, you can't tell from the face of the affidavits that these young adults are credible. Well, of course not. That's why you're supposed to hold an evidentiary hearing, so that Mr. Miller could present evidence. He could bring these children into court to testify in front of the judge, so she could assess their credibility live and make findings of fact and conclusions of law as to whether they were coerced somehow into recanting, or whether their recantation had more probative value than their original allegations to the police when they were children. But, you know, that's not what happened. Instead, the district court just tried to do this just on the face of the affidavits itself, and that's another hole in the law. You know, clear guidance as to when a district court should hold an evidentiary hearing. I mean, the cases from the Supreme Court that keep getting cited over and over and over again in these appeals of a denial of a Rule 35C without an evidentiary hearing seem to state that all a defendant needs to do is make out a prima facie case in a Rule 35C motion, such that if this were a civil case, it would survive a 12B6 motion to dismiss. And that's all he needs to do. And once he does that, then he's entitled to appointment of counsel and an evidentiary hearing so he can make the case. But over and over and over again, we get these orders back from the district court saying, well, you didn't make a good enough case in your written motion, and I can't tell from the face of these affidavits whether these witnesses are credible or not.
Ms. Rodenberg, isn't the first hurdle that Mr. Miller has to overcome here is to show that his motion was timely?
Well, that's what I was addressing a moment ago. How do you assess when a motion based on newly discovered evidence that was not available at the time or within 3 years after the mandate issued, after the direct appeal, or in this case, it was a guilty plea, 3 years from the date of sentencing, how do you tell when that's timely or not?
Didn't he get one of the affidavits within the 3 years?
He got the affidavit from the oldest son within the 3 years.
Okay, so he could have filed right then.
He could have, and then the district court could come back and say, well, that's not enough. You had three victims that you pled guilty to, and you had this fourth victim that I used to enhance your sentence because of, and all you've presented me is one affidavit, and that's not enough to make a showing that, but for knowing that evidence, you would not have pled guilty and you would have insisted on going to trial. So it makes sense in that situation that he would continue his investigation and try to get affidavits from, if not all four children, from three of the four children, which he finally was able to do once he got the affidavit from his niece.
But here the record is that he didn't, I mean, it's speculative. You may be right that one judge might come out that way, but maybe another judge would come out the other way. Here he didn't even file a motion when he got the first affidavit and tell the court at that time, look, I found something new. I want you to consider this, but at the same time, I'm spending some time and money to go out and try to find more affidavits. What's the legal effect of the fact that he had one of those affidavits within the 3 years, and for whatever reason, strategic or otherwise, he didn't do anything with it?
Because of the way the statute's worded and the way the law is written right now, why would he know that if he didn't get more newly discovered evidence later, that he could still be time barred if he didn't file it within the 3 year deadline? That's what I'm saying this hole in the law is. It's not clear as to what the timelines are with respect to newly discovered evidence, when clearly you can have newly discovered evidence after the time bar. How is this pro se defendant who's trying to do the best he can with the resources in the prison law library supposed to figure that out and say, well, maybe I should file a motion now and risk the district court denying it, but at least I've made my record, when he would look at the statute, he would look at the law and say, wait a minute, this is newly discovered evidence, and 35C itself, it says I can file a subsequent motion later if this evidence was not available later, so let me go get the rest of my evidence and then I'll file my motion.
Are you suggesting we adopt a rule just for pro se litigants?
No, I'm saying the same rules would apply when they have assistance of counsel. I mean, I think if he had appointment of counsel way back the first time, who could have explained all this to him, he would have maybe done better the second time. That's another problem that's not before the court in this case, but it's before the court in lots of other cases where a defendant makes a prima facie showing of a claim under Rule 35C, but is still denied appointment of counsel, and then gets tripped up on one of these procedural issues, and then is barred for all time from bringing a new 35C motion once he gets it figured out. If he'd had appointment of counsel the first time, then maybe he could have done better. Maybe that other lawyer could have said, well, if we're going to raise newly discovered evidence later, let's go try to find the children now, or at least alert the district court that issue, that we're working on this issue and we can't contact these children until they're adults. I mean, the other problem here is not only couldn't he find these children, he was prohibited from contacting them until they became adults because this is an SO case. And once he could legally contact Kyle, that is when he did so, and that's when Kyle submitted the middle affidavit. I mean, again,
The middle affidavit comes shortly after the three-year bar has run, correct?
Yes, it comes in 2007, but then he files his 35C motion based on a newly discovered evidence within 3 years of collecting that affidavit, which I am respectfully submitting seems, based on the current state of the case law, should be timely, that at least he's not sitting on his rights as long as he files something within 3 years, even though technically he could have filed it sooner. But there's no...
What's your basis for essentially restarting the 3 years every time a piece of newly discovered evidence surfaces, which could go on forever?
Well, the way the case law and the statute is written right now, every time there is newly discovered evidence that through the exercise of due diligence couldn't have been found sooner, he has the opportunity to file a subsequent 35C if that couldn't have been found within a time period of the last 35C, whether it's DNA evidence, newly discovered forensic evidence, recantation of some of these witnesses who've now become adults. So why wouldn't he do the prudent thing, which is to wait until he has as much evidence as possible, and then when he realizes his 3 years is coming up, go ahead and file his motion, even though he couldn't contact the youngest son. As far as I know, the youngest son was adopted out and has never been found.
Well, I'm not following you. You keep saying within the 3 years. The 3 years is already gone. So isn't it implicit in your argument that the 3 years starts anew when the inmate comes across some newly discovered evidence?
Well, the reason why I keep saying that is, I mean, I'm not the only one who keeps interpreting the statute that way. The district courts keep doing that too. I mean, I've had district courts deny a subsequent 35C motion that raises a Silva issue on ineffective assistance of prior post-conviction counsel because it was filed more than 3 years after the first post-conviction motion was denied. In other words, the district court saying that 3 years keeps restarting every time you are on notice of grounds, that you've got new grounds for a post-conviction motion based on newly discovered evidence, whether it's newly discovered ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel or something else, like the case here, a witness who's recanted. And in any event, I think that this case should be remanded so the district court can hold a hearing on all of these issues, and we can make a record as to what the defendant was assuming, what the defendant thought the law was, and whether his mistakes of law based on the prior case law and based on what he's seen some of these other district courts do, that he's got access to in a law library from the inmate law library helpers, that whether that does apply a justifiable excuse for him thinking that he could file this 35C motion based on his newly discovered affidavits in 2010, and why he shouldn't have filed it immediately as soon as he got the affidavit from Kay in 2007, especially since the district court is basing part of her ruling on the fact that she can't assess the credibility of the witnesses based on the face of the affidavit, which is something she never should have done to begin with. if she was concerned about the credibility of these children, then she should have held an evidentiary hearing and had them testify before trying to make findings of fact and conclusions of law without hearing from them. I just have a couple of seconds left. I guess I'd like to reserve whatever seconds I have left.
I think your time is just about, or has expired.
It's expired now.
Okay, so thank you, Ms. Ruttenberg.
Excuse me. Wendy Ritz, Assistant Attorney General, registration number 17024, representing the people in this case. The defendant here is challenging the trial court's denial of his post-conviction motion based on newly discovered evidence without appointing counsel or giving him an evidentiary hearing. And it's clear that 35C contemplates allowing defendants to file motions when they have discovered new evidence. However, it's also clear under our case law, under 16-5402, that those motions are still subject to the limits of the three-year limitation period. And if defendants fall outside that period, then they have to work within the framework of justifiable excuse and excusable neglect.
And just to be clear, when you say the three-year time limit, you're talking about 3 years from the date the conviction is final, or if there's been a direct appeal from when mandate is issued.
Absolutely. Here, the defendant filed an appeal from the denial of, I think, of his motion to withdraw his guilty plea. So he did have an appeal, and his three-year period ran at the end, 3 years from the date the mandate issued, I guess. While the defendant is alleging there are great holes in our framework, I think the reason there are these holes is because it's impossible for us to make rigid rules because every defendant is unique, every situation is unique, and the case law, CRIMP 35C and 16-5402, and the concepts of justifiable excuse and excusable neglect are set up to allow trial courts to assess this stuff under the circumstances of each case. We can't have a rigid rule because a defendant might come in and have some unusual reason that we never heard before as to why it's been, 5 years and suddenly he found new evidence or DNA testing or whatever. There might be a variety of reasons for things to have happened, and our framework allows trial courts to assess that.
So in the case of newly discovered evidence, as you suggest, 5 years after the three-year period runs, and it's a defendant's obligation to assert justifiable excuse or excusable neglect?
Right. And here the trial court, the defendant filed his untimely motion, and the trial court then gave him an opportunity to file an additional pleading saying, please tell me why I should accept your untimely filing. The defendant set forth his reasons, the trial court assessed those reasons, and appropriately determined that the defendant has essentially pretty much sat on the evidence when he should have acted more quickly. He had sat on two of the affidavits for 3 years and one of the affidavits for almost a year and a half. And the court appropriately determined that this was not did not fall within justifiable excuse or excusable neglect.
What do we take from that? I mean, did the court give any reason other than there's been a delay? And if that's the only reason, what are the outer limits of that delay? I mean, what if it had been 6 months or a year? I mean, I guess the question is, what kind of a rule is there other than just saying the trial court gets its best crack at it? But if all he's saying, or she, I can't remember who the trial judge was, is, well, there's been a delay, how do we measure that in the next case that comes up?
Yeah, the trial court, I think, essentially said the defendant has sat on these affidavits, and essentially they're no longer newly discovered evidence that fall within the framework of the statute. That was what the trial court did. However, the trial court then also went on to essentially address the merits of this claim under the Schneider standards. It did not explicitly address the three factors that Schneider requires, but it implicitly did. It discussed the fact that this evidence was simply impeaching, and the fact that the defendant had at the Providency hearing specifically been required to state that he had committed improper sexual acts with his children as part of the plea agreement. It was not just agreeing to the factual basis or anything like that. He was specifically apologizing to his children, and the trial court also pointed out the fact that this was not essentially newly discovered evidence that falls within the Schneider test because the defendant had sat on it for so long. So I think the trial court went through the test. You have to remember, this is the same trial judge who was with this defendant throughout his proceedings. This trial court heard the providency hearing. This trial court was at the motion to withdraw the guilty plea. This trial court had a lot of knowledge of this case, was aware of the children's behavior. These children had displayed extremely troubling behavior in the foster home, sexualized behavior, lots of, as the social worker pointed out, these children were extremely traumatized by the defendant's conduct. So that corroborating evidence, in conjunction with the defendant's admission at the guilty plea hearing that he had had improper sexual contact with his children, these were factors the trial court could look to in assessing the Schneider test. The court did so and essentially found that manifest injustice was not shown here, which is the standard that's required to withdraw a guilty plea under the newly discovered evidence test. So while the trial court did not, as explicitly as we might like, address the merits, the court went on to also do that too. And I think its determination that there was no manifest injustice here is supported by the record if you look at it, the record as a whole. Unless there are further questions, I would rest on the answer brief.
Thank you, Ms. Ritz. Thank you again, Ms. Ruttenberg. And we appreciate your pro bono representation of Mr. Miller in this case. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.